Good evening. This is Ozarks at Large for Friday night, August 28th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics discusses the week's news, including the decision to rename Albert Pike Elementary School in Fort Smith. Now will a prominent street in Fort Smith that also carries the name of the former Confederate general change as well. Our conversation just ahead. Arkansas's cases of COVID-19 increased by 838 during the recent 24-hour testing period, and there have now been 59,583 cumulative cases recorded in the state. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 17 additional deaths, with three of those deaths delayed reporting from last month and four of the deaths in nursing homes. Dr. Jose Romero, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says there are no clusters represented in the additional deaths. 756 Arkansans have now died from the virus. Hospitalizations from COVID-19 fell during the most recent 24 hours by 26. Governor Asa Hutchinson says that's good news in case this week's rising case numbers mean future hospitalizations.
Because it gives us the cushion. We hope that the new cases will not bring an increase in hospitalizations, but they might. But that gives us the cushion that we've been looking for.
11 counties are reporting new case totals of more than 20, including 49 new cases in Benton County, 41 in Washington, 39 in Pope, and 27 cases in Sebastian County. Pulaski County again had the most new cases in the state, 65. During the last 24-hour period, there were 6,330 test results received. Dr. Jose Romero says testing at the University of Arkansas this week revealed what he calls an alarming positivity rate among a set of 75 individuals.
University of Arkansas at Fayetteville had some testing performed. Approximately 75 cases, 75 individuals were tested. One-third of them turned out to be positive, and it's that university that we're going to be having a testing event on 2 days next week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Prior to that, we had already identified University of the Ozarks as having increased number of cases, and we will be having a testing event next Tuesday at that institution. Again, these point out the fact that these young adults are living in close quarters and that there's always the chance for it to spread in those close quarters if we don't adhere to the three tenets. Again, I'll say it, the mask, physical distancing, and washing of our hands.
Dr. Romero says it's important to get in control of possible campus outbreaks before cases possibly spread into the community. State officials today were asked if they had theories on why this week's numbers have steadily increased with each day's reporting. Governor Hutchinson says when he sees such high numbers, the first question he asks is, what can be done?
Invariably, you know, we're getting, as you can see from the map, that they're really cases that are spread fairly evenly across Arkansas to a certain extent. I mean, you've got some variations there, but it's broad-based. It's not in one specific geographic area or one congregate setting. And so that means that anywhere you go in the state of Arkansas, you could expose yourself if you're not careful and you don't protect yourself.
The governor says he sees the number more as flat, but something that needs to be watched very carefully. Dr. Romero says there is a level of community spread that has not fallen off.
I flew to the CDC this week, and it was obvious that even in the airport, even with signs that mentioned the governor's mandate, individuals were not wearing their mask or were wearing their mask inappropriately. And I think that that is very important, that we have to take this personal responsibility of using the mask at any time we're in public. When I can stand in line and have two or three people behind me not using the mask, while others are still using it, that shows that we still haven't, that our message hasn't permeated throughout the community yet.
There are 5,496 active cases in Arkansas, including just more than 4,600 community cases. The governor's press briefings can be viewed in their entirety at the governor's YouTube channel. This afternoon, the Fayetteville Public School District announced a staff member at the Fayetteville Virtual Academy had tested positive for COVID-19. A press release indicates people identified as probable close contacts will be notified today by the district's Department of Health Services, and the Arkansas Department of Health will conduct any necessary contact tracing. Two proposals have been struck from the November ballot by the Arkansas Supreme Court. Proposed amendments that would have, if approved, altered how the state draws redistricting lines and establish an open primary election system in the state were disqualified by the court. The court agreed with Arkansas Secretary of State John Thurston that organizers of the petition drives did not verify that all signature gatherers had passed criminal background checks, but had certified that the checks had been timely acquired. A group that opposes the measure, Arkansans for Transparency Issues, called the decision a huge win in a continued fight against billionaire-backed out-of-state liberals. Stephanie Matthews, campaign manager of Open Primaries Arkansas, called the ruling a dark day for democracy and an example of the influence of extreme partisanship. Bonnie Miller, chair of Arkansas Voters First, says the state Supreme Court has taken deliberate steps to make it impossible for citizens to petition their government. This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his home office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is with Talk Business and Politics. Most Fridays we get together to talk about some of the news from the previous 7 days. Welcome back, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I'm doing well. I'm not doing as well as someone who has had a beer named after him after 30 years in the business, unlike somebody else on this call. Not that I'm bitter about it or anything, but I'm okay. I'll be all right.
The beer is named after the program, or inspired.
Yeah, whatever.
Ozarks Lager. Yes, from Ozark Brewing there in Rogers, and it's quite lovely to have that happen. It was something, yes.
Yeah, it was. In all seriousness, congrats. That was damn cool.
It is pretty cool. Well, that leads me to a nice segue. Speaking of things that are named, Albert Pike Elementary School in Fort Smith, a year from now, will not be called that, and perhaps earlier than a year from now.
Correct. The Fort Smith Public Schools Board of Education, after several months of wailing and gnashing, has decided, and it was a surprise, 7-0 unanimous vote to rename Albert Pike Elementary School. Just, I think we've talked about this before, by way of reminder, Mr. Pike settled in Fort Smith in the 1830s. He was a lawyer. Unfortunately, he was a former Confederate general. He was also part of an effort to expel free blacks from Arkansas. And he wrote, quote, "We mean that the white race and that race alone shall govern this country." And went on to say and explain that the white race was the only one fit to govern the country. So I think it's easy to see why there's a problem there. Of course, the argument came down to, you know, why now? This is just being politically correct and that type of thing. All the several members of the board, including Dalton Person, used an old quote to say there was never a wrong time to do the right thing. So anyway, they're going to rename that. But like I said, they voted 7-0 to rename the building. That the process now goes to a committee who will look at the different names. And I mean, you know, Bass Reeves has already come up. I mean, there's all kinds of names that have been thrown up there. There are also some who don't want to name it after a person. You know, maybe, I don't know, a tree. I have no idea what else. But we'll see where that goes.
And this. What about the city board?
Well, yeah, so Albert Pike Elementary sits on Albert Pike Avenue in Fort Smith. So you kind of have a resulting problem, I guess. So the board really kind of pushed over the last several weeks by City Director Andre Good, who's the only African-American on the board, has been pushing just via email, encouraging his other board members. I've talked to him. He didn't want to be the one to push this. But really no one else would step up. Earlier this week, City Administrator Carl Gefkin put out kind of a draft. They revised the policy on how to name, rename buildings, roads, other type infrastructure. And so they'll start considering that as part of the process. I think that will begin September 8th at a study session. Interestingly enough, this revised policy, which has not been approved by the board, notes that we find efforts to change the name of a street should be subject to the most critical examination due to factors related to commerce, public safety response, cost to the public, and a few other reasons. And it says that the renaming of streets is strongly discouraged. So that will give plenty of ammunition out of, to folks who don't want to rename it. But, you know, after a 7-0 vote by the school board, I'm just not sure how the city board can politically justify not following suit.
All right. The bakery district in Fort Smith, the picture on talkbusiness.net looks pretty cool.
Well, it is an interesting concept. It's the old Shipley, it's mostly the old Shipley baking facility, which when a thousand years ago when I was young and all the body parts worked, I worked in downtown Fort Smith, and you often got great whiffs of that bakery, the bread being baked. It was a great great smell to the downtown Fort Smith. Thankfully, if the wind was blowing the right way. But Shipley closed many years ago, and that building just kind of sat there. Fortunately for Fort Smith, it sat right across from Hanna Oil and Gas. And Bill Hanna, who's been very instrumental over the past couple of decades in investing in downtown Fort Smith and investing in events, I think he essentially got tired of looking at it and decided we're going to do something with it. So he bought it. The city at one time wanted to raise it and just make a parking lot out of it. But this is an historic structure. But he's created a facility. My daughters have been there several times and love it. There's this coffee company that's there. There's a bookshop there. University of Arkansas at Fort Smith may put in, is thinking about putting in an education type facility that's not focused on students. It's more focused on business support. Incredibly neat concept for downtown Fort Smith. I hope Mr. Hanna is successful with it. He's been very patient. He continues to have a very patient attitude. He's not just building it all at once. I think in the story we quote him as saying that we're going to build, you know, a few phases, give that the market a chance to catch up with that, and then we'll build out some more. So in this era of COVID, where the business news is not always good, we were glad to be able to have this story on our website.
Right. And finally, you have communicated, I think, with the new communications manager for Fort Smith, Sherry Cooper.
Sherry Cooper, who I was pleasantly surprised to learn, is really from the area. She's a 1987 graduate of Poteau High School. Now, we won't hold it against her that she's from Eastern Oklahoma. As long as she doesn't hold it against me, I'm from Johnson County. I guess that's all fair. But, she has, you know, I hate to have to kind of brag on a city employee. I don't know if I have to turn in my journalism card if I do that. But she has an impressive background. She worked in city planning and economic development and communications in several cities in California, Oklahoma, Philadelphia. She was with the Oklahoma Department of Commerce for some time. Prior to that, she was engaged. She's been a journalist before, so she knows the world from our side as well. But she left a job in California. She was, before COVID, had to return to this part of the world to kind of help with some family issues, hoping that she would find a good job in the process. And then COVID hit. But on the last day that the Fort Smith Communications job was open, she noticed the posting. So she applied on the last day. And so she was awarded the job. But she's got a lot on her plate. I mean, the city of Fort Smith, I don't think I have to tell many of your listeners that the city of Fort Smith does not have the best of history when it comes to being transparent about what it's doing. I mean, it has a statewide reputation for not following the Freedom of Information Act. I mean, remember they lied to the public about recycling. I mean, I could go on and on. The previous communication manager resigned in March and said in a letter she quit because the environment was averse to openness and clear and honest communication. And hell, when your communications manager resigned instead of that, you know, things aren't well. So she's got a big, she got a big job in front of her, but so far I like some of the things she's saying in terms of developing a comprehensive communications plan, trying to build relationships. So we'll see. It's not so much that I wish her well. I just, I'm from the journalist in me would really like to be able to have someone dependable that we can reach out to at the city who will be responsive.
Being in the position you are, we'll be able to stay tuned in and see if that works.
I got my fingers crossed.
All right. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these stories and many others at talkbusiness.net. Next time we talk, Michael, it's September.
Yep, it's September, and I'll try to have about six of those beers under my belt.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Michael.
All right, later.
All right, bye.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, headquartered in Little Rock, has a new leader. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Holly Dixon is replacing longtime Arkansas ACLU Executive Director Rita Sklar, who retired last summer. Dixon was selected, she says, after an extensive nationwide search. An Arkansas native born 1972, as an eight-year-old girl, she became aware of racial inequality watching, of all things, a beauty pageant featuring Lenkola Sullivan, the first African-American to be crowned Miss Arkansas in 1980.
Lenkola Sullivan was the first black woman to be in the top five in the Miss America pageant. But she was an Arkansan, and before she was Miss America and before she was Miss Arkansas, she was vying as a contestant to be Miss White River, which is where I lived. And I was working, my parents were volunteering in an organization, and I was working, helping my mom decorate a float for a contestant for that pageant, and it was Lenkola Sullivan. And I watched the pageant. I met Lenkola. She came to check on her float. She was amazing. She was beautiful. But I watched her in that pageant, and it was very clear that she had to win over the audience and the judges with her personality and her performance because of her race. She had to work harder to win them over.
Dixon says the realization that Sullivan lost her bid to later become Miss America because of her race made a lasting impression. Dixon joined Arkansas ACLU in 2006, having practiced as a labor and civil rights attorney for 8 years.
So issues of gender inequality, race inequality, problems in our jails and prisons, lots of people whose rights were being abused, difficult to get into and stay into court, even on a strong case. But in terms of trying to tackle some of the largest issues in our state.
The nonpartisan American Civil Liberties Union was founded in 1920, quote, to defend and preserve the individual rights and liberties guaranteed to every person in this country by the Constitution and laws of the United States. The Arkansas affiliate was founded in 1970.
We have a union and a foundation. A foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we also have 501c4 organization. That's our union that lobbies for change in law. And we have a board of directors for both the union and the foundation, and they oversee the governance of our affiliate.
The ACLU office in Washington subsidizes legal work conducted in all 50 states. Dixon also files for legal fees from winning cases, which are rolled back into the organization's legal fund. The nonprofit foundation is supported by annual memberships and tax-deductible contributions. Dixon says Arkansas ACLU receives thousands of requests for help every year?
They vary as widely as the rights that we have under the Constitution and the people that we have in the state of Arkansas. And we do the best that we can to support those who write to us or turn to us seeking assistance. We have a model where we utilize the support of attorneys who are licensed in the state of Arkansas to take our cases.
Providing research, briefings, and in some cases, cost reimbursement to volunteer attorneys across the state. The girth of cases litigated by ACLU of Arkansas regard free speech, religion and belief, equal rights, reproductive rights, as well as racial and criminal justice. But Dixon assumed leadership during a global pandemic, which, as the National ACLU office declares, quote, has laid bare the systemic oppression that is at the root of inequality in America, end quote.
Well, first, I'd like to say the ACLU of Arkansas never quit working. We've been working around the clock and even harder in the midst of the pandemic, because I absolutely agree that the pandemic has magnified the problems we have in America and the problems we have in Arkansas.
Starting with the Arkansas correctional system, where COVID-19 positive infections are concentrated, ACLU immediately called for low-level offenders to be released to ease congestion, where recent mass testing in prisons revealed a 35% positivity rate.
It's spread by like wildfire. The state still doesn't have a handle on it. And that's why we joined with Arkansas Disability Rights and Squire Patton Boggs Law Firm and the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund to file a case against the Arkansas Department of Correction on behalf of all prisoners in the system, seeking the types of relief that we need to protect prisoners from the virus.
On Friday, Arkansas Secretary of Correctional Facilities Solomon Graves announced, in addition to 800 nonviolent prison inmates released in April, 500 more releases are pending. Reproductive rights, including access to safe abortions, is also an area of litigation for Dixon.
We've been fighting to try to maintain access to abortion in the state of Arkansas every single year since I've been here and before I got here. In the last 50 years, this affiliate has been fighting for that. And the pandemic gave politicians an opportunity to grandstand around this issue again, and we had to go into court to get emergency relief for patients who had the clinic shut down for political purposes, not health care purposes.
Dixon says, by targeting abortion providers with medically unnecessary restrictions intended to close clinics and push abortion even further out of reach, ACLU, the ACLU of Arkansas and Planned Parenthood, have repeatedly sued on behalf of Little Rock Family Planning Services, Planned Parenthood Great Plains, and two physician providers to stop such laws from taking effect. And this year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that one such restriction in Louisiana requiring hospital admission requirements on abortion clinic providers was unconstitutional.
Nonetheless, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals panel that reviewed our 2017 case issued a decision to vacate the trial court's decision and remand it for more consideration in light of Justice Roberts' separate opinion.
Dixon says she plans to appeal, asking the panel in full court to reconsider. Also this summer, on June 15th, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the 1964 Civil Rights Act does protect gay, lesbian, and transgender employees from discrimination based on sex, a civil rights battle Dixon has long waged in Arkansas, but says there's a long way to go.
We have a new hate crimes bill that would enhance criminal penalties against someone who commits a crime against an LGBTQ person because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. Yet that bill also reiterates that nothing in that law changes the Arkansas Civil Rights Act or the Interstate Commerce Protection Act. And those laws very intentionally excluded sexual orientation and gender identity from the protections of the State Civil Rights Act and prohibited localities from providing any protection against employment discrimination, housing discrimination, public accommodations discrimination because of someone's gender identity or sexual orientation. And to reiterate that, you know, we're not amending those laws in the context of this hate crimes law, I think really illuminates where we are in this state.
And a little over 10 weeks away from the general election, Arkansas ACLU is gearing up on its voter protection project.
We are continuing to focus on rural areas and populations that are often overlooked, people who are detained in jails at this point, who don't have a felony conviction that's, you know, that hasn't been cleared, still have the right to vote. They can vote absentee. But we're working diligently to get that voting rights information out. And if people have questions about their voting rights, I encourage them to check our social media, our Facebook, our Twitter. We now have Instagram. Check our webpage. Contact our office. We're happy to distribute whatever information that person may need or people in the community may need, and ask people, look for that volunteer opportunity to help ensure that everybody has a chance to vote and have their vote counted.
Search ACLU.org/affiliate/Arkansas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Sunday morning on KUAF, On the Media examines what back to school means in 2020. Critics say some earnest messages from college presidents welcoming students to campus is another way of just asking parents to send in tuition checks. And some students say at-home learning is a liberation. On the Media, Sunday morning at 11 on 91.3. The School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas is going to take over management of ArkansasCOVID.com. The site has, since the earliest days of the pandemic, deciphered numbers and trends associated with the virus in Arkansas. Launched by Misty Orpin, the site's analysis is available to more than 11,000 followers. Rob Wells, an assistant professor of journalism at the U of A, will oversee the management, and a mix of graduate students and students will work on the site. This is Ozarks at Large. Looking for a specialty cup of Joe? Well, you can sample some of the region's best coffee, tea, and chocolate tomorrow with the Northwest Arkansas Caffeine Crawl. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth has a preview of what crawlers can expect.
Although just in its third year, the Northwest Arkansas Caffeine Crawl, which takes place this Saturday, will look a lot different than in previous years.
So we are requiring everyone to have a mask when you're drinking or consuming. You can bring your mask down and everything. A lot of places will host us outside, so plenty of space to separate and take your mask off, just like you would anywhere else. We have limited the maximum people on a route to 15. We also really highly encourage everyone to have foam soap or sanitizer in their cars in between stops.
That's Jason Burton, the owner of Caffeine Crawl, which organizes other similar events around the country. He says despite restrictions, shops from Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, and Fayetteville were eager to participate in this year's event.
But we have more shops involved than we ever have. We have 11, and not just a lot of people think it's all coffee, but we also have Savoy Tea and Markham and Fitz chocolate makers, and both of them have been on previous crawls.
The crawl offers three different routes starting at 9, 10, and 11 a.m. respectively that each give the caffeine curious a sampling of the region's specialty coffee, tea, chocolate, and other food offerings. Claire Bullard works for Airship Coffee in Bentonville, one of the first stops on the crawl, and she says participants can expect quality coffee and some surprises.
We'll be kind of presenting and hanging out outside, and what we're going to be offering is what we're calling a culture trip, and it's a really uniquely processed coffee from El Salvador, as well as our house-made jalapeno pineapple kombucha, both kind of playing more on the fermentation process than flavor. So that is what the caffeine crawlers can look forward to from us.
She says Airship wanted to take part in the crawl because it helps them reach a broader audience.
We want people to understand that although it's technically called specialty coffee, it's for everyone. And we want to lower the barrier of access by offering coffees that they may not be able to have somewhere else, but offer it to them in a way that is affordable because of our direct farm relationship.
She also says when it comes to the world of specialty coffee, Northwest Arkansas can often get overlooked.
Finding people be surprised by what they're able to see in our shops makes me really happy. And as opposed to it being a highly densely populated urban area, I think we have pretty high caliber coffee industry and healthy coffee culture around here.
And Burton agrees. In fact, he says that helps explain why more shops are interested in setting up a stop on the Caffeine Crawl route.
I think we're going to continue to see more shops and roasters open in the future, even with things the way they are now. I know we're all kind of in a standstill, but there's just a lot of passion. It's a beautiful place to live. A lot of the people we end up talking to that are there have grown up there and then moved away and come back, whether it was Chicago or New York or whatever, and kind of fallen in love with their state again. And a lot more people are making a 3-4 hour drive to visit Northwest Arkansas that might have not thought about it 5 years ago. And a big part of that, I think, is the interest in food and beverage culture, and especially local flavors and local culture. So everyone's very supportive of one another. That's another reason we pick the cities we do. We want to make sure that other shops are very supportive of one another, and they are. The baristas, the owners, the roasters, they all kind of work together and support each other, and that's really cool.
While this year's routes are at a limited capacity, Burton says they'll be offering ways to follow along virtually.
But every single stop will archive what they're doing, their tasting, their presentation, and condense it down to a sentence or two and a couple of photos. So they can go back and look at that information on the website under the Northwest Arkansas specific page. Even if you're not going, you can click on the link on the route. There's a map, a Google map on each route. So you can kind of do your own crawl later on and so forth and use our route.
Mostly though, Burton says he just wants participants to take the time to enjoy something as simple as a cup of coffee.
You know, people talk about traveling to Europe and having an espresso. Honestly, right now during COVID, like just seeing rolling hills in the background and a little breeze while sipping on some local roasted coffee in Northwest Arkansas sounds amazing to me. So really looking forward to that.
Tickets start at $24.50, and patrons can find information on participating shops and COVID-19 guidelines online at caffeinecrawl.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
The Alzheimer's Foundation of America's Educating Tour is holding a free virtual conference Tuesday morning at 10 to help Arkansas residents affected by Alzheimer's during the COVID-19 pandemic. You can register for the free program at alzfdn.org/tour. You can also call 866-232-8484. Startup Junkie Foundation accepting 60-second video pitches for a few more days for the first-ever televised Idea Fame Pitch Competition. Submitted video pitches will air on September 14th. Two contestants will be awarded cash prizes to help turn those ideas into reality. Deadline for submitting video pitches, Monday. For details, startupjunkie.com. Just ahead on this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large, we'll check in with Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. She's at her home office in Bella Vista. We'll call her and find out what she suggests we do this weekend. That's coming up next on today's Ozarks at Large.
The KUAF Giving Tree is making its appearance early this year. As school starts around the KUAF listening area, many teachers don't have adequate supplies to make school safe for everyone. That's why we're asking you to donate personal protective equipment, hand soap, paper towels, masks, gloves, and more, that KUAF will distribute to local public school teachers. For the past decade, KUAF listeners have donated to the KUAF Giving Tree, getting food, clothes, and other supplies that impacted hundreds in our area. Now we're asking for your help again. Just drop by the Carver Center for Public Radio at 9 South School Avenue in Fayetteville and place your donation in the large container in the front parking lot. We'll then sanitize all donations before delivering them to schools throughout the KUAF listening area. For a full list of items to donate, you can go to KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large for the final Friday of August 2020. With me on the phone from her home in Bella Vista is Becca Martin Brown, who is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Welcome back to Ozarks, Becca.
We have an itinerary. If y'all are new to this, it means I'm going to tell you what to do for entertainment all weekend. You can ignore me, but we have enough things to tell you. And how exciting is that?
And I'm going to tell you to socially distance, wash your hands, wear your mask, do all those things no matter what you're doing or where you're doing it.
Absolutely. I had to go back to the gym this week, so socially distanced and masks and hand sanitizer. And yeah, so on with the good news. Tonight starts the itinerary with a new Theater Squared production that I'm not sure I understand, but it's going to be super cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the new play series, and it's called Russian Troll Farm. And the premise is a business in St. Petersburg, Russia, where disinformation is their business.
Which sounds like real life.
Right. And the playwright, Sarah Ganser, says she didn't work at making the characters Russian, so it should feel like The Office and Parks and Rec and What We Do in the Shadows. But it looks at these people who are essentially, as she says, playwrights. They're making up stories and selling them.
Okay.
Now, here's the part I'm not sure I understand. The director, Jared Mazzocchi, has figured out a way to use the Zoom platform. This is going to look, I think, like the old live TV shows.
I Love Lucy?
Like I Love Lucy, where they were admittedly live, but they're going to cut and edit and overlay, because their actors are all in different places.
Gotcha.
It's going to be really cool, and it happens tonight at 7 live.
Okay.
So you can see this happen like a live TV performance, with technicians editing on the fly and the actors working live and this weird combination of theater and live TV, all done on the Zoom platform.
And then it happens tonight at 7, but if you can't see it live, is there an opportunity for you to see it otherwise?
They will tape it and it will be available all weekend.
Okay.
Admission is by donation. And you can find all this at theater2.org. Tomorrow morning, you can get up and you can go down to the Fayetteville Square, and you can go to Phoenix Fayetteville, where they have a new exhibit called Chaos, Confusion, Creativity.
That sounds right.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Clearly looking at the pandemic, and they had to change what they were planning to do, so they invited all of their artists that are members of Phoenix Fayetteville to submit work for this show, and then it will change. I mean, some work might go away, new work may come throughout the time that it's open, and it's open until October 31st. So it's an ongoing art exhibit.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and
it'll
evolving.
It'll continue to evolve.
Right.
Yeah. Gallery hours are 11 to 2 Thursday and Friday and 10 to 1 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, you can go to the Momentary.
What's happening at the Momentary?
Well, A, they're open, and B, they're doing all sorts of things to take you outdoors.
And outdoors is nice, like, right now.
Yeah, not just the You Belong Here sculpture, but they have a flag project and other things going on outdoors where you should be able to spend a good chunk of the day. They have a new Narcissus garden that they just installed, Yayo Kusama's Narcissus garden. It's just a good place to spend your Sunday. They are open from 10 to 7 on Sunday, and that should get you clear through until you have time to stop and read your Sunday paper.
Which you can do digitally or still physically.
Well, some of you can. Well, yeah, it still comes to everybody physically.
Right.
Because it's Sunday.
Right.
Because that's where all the best stuff is. Like, what's up?
You,
And in What's Up This Sunday, you're going to find a story about the North Forest Lights coming back to Crystal Bridges on September 4th.
That's exciting.
A very cool Warbirds weekend over Labor Day at the Arkansas Air and Military Museum.
Mm-hmm.
They've got both, I got to get this right, a B-17 Flying Fortress and a B-29 Super Fortress.
Those are some big planes.
Are both coming in. Those are some 400 and some odd feet wingspans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what? How big's a football field?
100 yards?
That's half a football field.
Yeah.
That's 300 feet. That's half a football field wingspan.
Right.
That's a big plane.
Yeah, it is.
You can ride in them. It's very expensive, but you could also go see them for not very expensive. So there's a story about that. The Rogers Historical Museum has a new online exhibit about women and the right to vote.
100th anniversary.
Which some of us still believe in.
Yeah.
It's a good weekend. It's a good weekend.
Well, have fun, everybody. Be careful. Be safe. And
wear your mask.
Wear your mask.
Wash your hands.
Yes, often. And we'll reconvene next Friday. How's that?
Isn't it wonderful that we have some things to look forward to?
Yes. Yes.
That makes Mama happy. And if Mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
So we want to be happy. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Becca.
Thank you, sir.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today, over the phone in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio, we're speaking with Connie Hoffman. She's with the League of Women Voters of Arkansas. Connie, nice to speak with you.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Now, what we're going to be talking about is a neat event that y'all are offering this Saturday. But first, I wanted you to kind of remind our listeners, League of Women Voters, this is a nonpartisan group. What do you guys do?
In Benton County, our big focus has been on registering voters. At the beginning of this year, we went to every single high school in the county and registered young voters during their lunch breaks. So we registered probably about 475 young voters, and we went to NWAC and the culinary school. So that's been our focus the whole year.
This Saturday, taking place in Centerton, y'all are hosting a drive-through voter registration. Tell me how this is going
to
work.
We are doing this for anyone who needs to register to vote or needs to change their name or address. And the location is right next to the Centerton City Hall. There's a parking lot, 290 North Main Street. And people can just stay in their cars. We'll come up to them with masks and shields, and they can register in the safety and convenience of their cars. Every safety precaution will be observed. We're asking everyone, even the people in the cars, to wear their masks. The deadline to register is October 5th, so we're trying to make a big push up here in Benton County to register voters.
Connie Hoffman with League of Women Voters. Again, that drive-through voter registration event taking place this Saturday, August 29th, 9 a.m. through 1 p.m. in Centerton. Okay, Connie, if someone might want to know a little more, maybe more about the League of Women Voters, what's the best way?
I'd be happy for them to email me, and my email is hoffmanconnie@gmail.com. if they're interested in helping us up in Benton County with the League of Women Voters.
Connie, thanks so much, and I hope you get a huge crowd out there on Saturday.
Thank you, and thank you for this opportunity to get our message out. I think it's really a wonderful public service that you're doing.
The Community Spotlight on KUAF, Local Matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. Oklahoma State Department of Health is reporting 8 additional counties in that state have now been upgraded to the moderate risk level for COVID-19. Almost every eastern Oklahoma county bordering Arkansas now in the moderate or second highest level. Only Delaware County isn't considered to be at moderate risk. Moderate risk, as established by the Oklahoma State Department of Health, means at least 15 new daily cases per 100,000 residents being reported. Among the Oklahoma guidelines for people in those counties, face masks strongly suggested in all public spaces. Travel should be limited to only essential trips, and visits to family and friends should be limited as well. Additionally, 8 deaths from the virus in Oklahoma reported in the last 24 hours, bringing that state's fatality number to 786. Fayetteville Public Library is providing pandemic-related resources to non-English speakers, this time by partnering with the UAMS Northwest Regional Campus. On Friday, September 4th, UAMS's Lavez Lopez Love will virtually provide information about local progress in COVID-19 testing and contact tracing through the CARES Act. The online event, which will begin at 6 p.m., will be completely in Spanish and requires attendees to register in order to receive a Zoom link. If you'd like to know more, FAYLIB.org, faylib.org, or you can call 856-7116 with any questions.
It's one of our most precious human abilities.
Empathy, at a deep level, is the understanding that someone else's world is just as real as yours.
Psychologist Jamil Zaki says we can grow our capacity for kindness and goodwill. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Hidden Brain, tomorrow afternoon at 3, then again Sunday morning at 6 on 91.3 KUAF. To find a schedule of all of our weekend programs when they air on 91.3 as well as our HD channels, you can go to KUAF.com. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Cedarville, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Friday evening edition of Ozarks included Jacqueline Froelich and Daniel Carruth. Additional reporting tonight supplied by Zuzana Sitek. Timothy Dennis produced our show at his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. As always, we appreciate the Friday time from Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics and from Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Our mid-show song comes to us from the Fayetteville Roots Festival and Red Barn Studios. The Community Spotlight, produced by Pete Hartman, inside the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Our show's theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl's most recent CD is Safe in Sound. You can find it at all the major music streaming services. Speaking of streaming, you can always subscribe for free to the Ozarks at Large podcast. It's available on all the major podcast distributors, or you could ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent edition of our program, or you could do that at ozarksatlarge.com, or, and that magic word again, free, we have a free Ozarks at Large daily email that lands in your inbox every Monday through Friday afternoon. It gives you details about what was on the show that day in case you missed it. Also gives you a link so you can listen to those individual stories on your time. And if you like all the features that KUAF and Ozarks at Large provide you over the air and digitally, please remember we are here because of you, listeners just like you. You can support KUAF by going online to supportkuaf.com. Different ways you can support us. Ultimately, you determine the amount. If you can and you're able, please consider doing so now. Supportkuaf.com. We'll be back with you Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large. Then Monday at noon, sort of brand new week of Ozarks at Large. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. Please take care of yourself this weekend. We'll be back with you Sunday morning at 9 o'clock.